This episode of AetherStream is brought to you by Aetherflow Media. We would not be able to create content like this without the support of our amazing patrons.
Welcome back to AetherStream. Last time we had a little bit of fun in the deserts in hot times, daddy issues, and Minfilia making her choice. Or should we now call her...
It's Reen now.
Reen.
Renfilia.
I was going to say Renfilia for a second.
Well, she's chosen her own name, so we shouldn't give her the name of the devil anymore. Like, she doesn't deserve that. That's good. That's fine. Like, she doesn't have to have that name.
Own woman.
Yep. So Reen is now her own person, which she's been gifted the Child of Light abilities, because she's now that homing beacon for light.
Yeah, her wireless got upgraded.
Mm-hmm.
And then we finished off the dungeon, which was... I'm still a little bit surprised, because after the podcast, Croatoan actually told us a little bit more about that Sin Eater, because it just didn't make sense to me. And I didn't realize that that was actually an elemental corruption.
Yeah, it's a little baby sprite that just got swole.
Too much light. Yep.
It went off its diet and it ate too much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then after we killed that, we actually kind of... are now going to finish that off, because I just didn't realize that we didn't finish it all. But
no, we always have some kind of unfinished business. We never get through everything, but it's fine.
MSQ big, so
it big. Oh it, Lord, he big.
Indeed.
Yeah. So Croa, would you like to take us off on our new adventure?
Yeah. So, you know, we leave the Malik as well. You know, everyone's saying, you know, there was that really curious result, because they always had the animation with the light entering into your body. But this time around, it was just a little bit different. And then when you're out, you know, Reen is like, something's wrong. But then she decides against it. She's like, no, I'm just imagining it.
Yeah, just being paranoid.
And Yshtola, so everyone leaves. They're like, all right, let's go back to the Crystarium. And Yshtola stays behind. She's like, so she sees it too. And it's all this, like, you know, really obscure, oh, something's wrong, but they won't tell me. Like,
it's like, if it was just a case of indigestion, Yshtola would probably tell us, so it's probably something worse.
Something ethereal, because she can't even see, so she can see something that's something bad. And we head up to the Crystarium, but it was really funny, because you don't even get to go into the ocular. Yshtola kind of, like, stops you right before you enter into that. And she's like, I need you to hear what Reen is going to tell you. And then she's like, okay, go ahead. And Reen says, so I see the light enter your body and it's getting really monstrous. She uses the word monstrous, and it's, you know, it's not doing so well for you. They ask you how you feel. And like at that moment, that's when it starts. You hear that crack. You hear the sound of, it's like cracking glass, and your character kind of like struggles a little bit. And they're like, well, we figured it out. Something wrong happened.
Well, that's not good.
The timing. Yeah, the timing was pretty on point, because they were like, how do you feel? And it's like before you said that, I was fine.
Actually, I feel like I got 7 years of bad luck inside my head. Like, I think I should get it looked at.
Yep.
I will honestly say, when I first heard that, I went from being like, yeah, we're doing this, to, oh no, what did I break? Oh no.
Yep.
It was, maybe we shouldn't be doing this anymore. Maybe we should stop for a little bit, go on a diet.
Mm-hmm. No more ether for you. Because of the result of that effect, you know, they tell you, hey, we got this handle. We can do a report with, you don't have to worry about it.
Go take a nap.
Go to bed. Yeah, go to bed.
Because a nap and a sandwich fixes everything.
It does. What was really funny, though, a lot of the community members noticed there is an option to, so when Yshtola tells you to go to bed, you can say, yes, mother.
There is not a person alive that I know that did not pick that option.
And then she's like, enough of that. I'll take you across the knee. And just like,
whoa. She wants to spank you. And I'm like, girl, don't touch me.
All of a sudden, it's gotten a little kinky.
Yeah, I didn't expect that, but then the reply was even better. So it was just like, oh, whoa, okay.
All the Yshtola fanboys are lining up like, yes, mommy.
Woo! Nope.
Oh, yeah, that was a good moment for Yshtola fandom, that's for sure.
Oh, God, yeah.
Then, you know, of course, you don't fight with Master Matoya. You go to bed when Master Matoya tells you to go to bed. So you show up to the pendant and you enter in and you see Ardbert. He wasn't again with you the entire time. He had stayed behind. So, you know, you get that option to ask him. It's like, oh, this is where you went. Or he's like, oh, you didn't come with. And he merely says sometimes the dead wishes not to be disturbed.
I actually asked him, why didn't you come with me this time? Yeah. He's like, yeah, I don't want to be disturbed.
Yeah, he was just brooding. A ghost.
What were you
doing
that whole time? Like, what were you doing?
And like, I noticed that he was actually getting brighter at that point too.
Mm-hmm.
He's been tonally shifting for a little bit, and you don't really notice it until that point because it is just very drastic.
Well, other than like when we first met him, he was basically transparent to the point that, you know, we couldn't see him, and he's just been slowly getting solid, but not solid.
And when he first shows up in any of the cinematics, he's just a shade.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, wow.
Which is really, really cool, considering as you guys are talking about what had taken place during Amarang and Malik as well. You know, he learns about the fate of Inphilia, and he's a little upset because he's like, well, if she's gone, I'm never going to know why I'm still here. Then you go into kind of like, I guess, an ethereal like breakdown.
Yep, ethereal corruption.
Yeah, you have a moment.
Yeah, the light starts pouring out of your body, and Ardbert's like, what's going on? He goes to reach out to help you, and he feels for the first time.
He boops you a little bit.
Yeah, he feels pain in his hand, and then realizes that he felt pain for the first time in forever. So he's just like, hold up, first of all, why am I feeling?
It's like you go to touch your friend on the arm, and he gives you a static shock.
Yeah, yep. But you haven't felt anything, not even a static shock, for like 100 years. So all of a sudden, it's like, whoa, I remember what that feels like. Why is this suddenly happening? So you're both kind of just confused, because not only do you not know why you had that ethereal breakdown in your body, Ardbert's feeling now. So it's just like it's all simultaneously happening.
And also, you know, your ethereal breakdown just magically stops at that point in time, too.
Yeah, it was gone. It was on and off because it started to take place when you were in front of the Crystarium. And then when you went to go to sleep, it's, you know, it's just right before you go to sleep, it's happening. And it's like periodically happening throughout that time period. You know, Ardbert kind of steps out of the picture because he hears the Crystal Exarch knocking the door. And cue what I would consider one of the most adorable scenes of Shadowbringers is the Crystal Exarch holding his hands together and leaning back and forth like a shy child. Waiting for you to answer the door because he's worried about you.
Now, this is where I can see like all the fandoms are choosing the Exarch because he's like, oh, but he cares for you.
Yeah,
he's so adorable, Uwu.
Yes, he cares for you enough that he has just pumped you full of, like, I don't know how many gallons of corrupted light, but that's okay. He came. He brought you a sandwich.
Sandwiches make everything better, guys. That is totally an excuse to pump your friends full of corrupted light and, you know, potentially turn them into a light warden or whatever. It's fine.
Just see, give them a nice sandwich and a nap.
Yep. Exactly.
Balanced as all things should be.
Okay, Thanos.
Kidding. But, you know, he comes to check on you and you tell him about the light. And, you know, you kind of have a talk about the whole thing, about the light wardens. You know, he says there's one more and he encourages you. You know, he's like, fight, keep fighting. You can do this. You know, you can ask him. It's like, is this it after the last light warden? He's like, yep. Once you beat the last light warden, the fight for the first has been won. And we're going to keep continuing up to that point.
Do you know what this is like? This is like that one Monty Python sketch with Mr. Creosote. Just one more wafer thin mint. Just one more light warden, Warrior of Darkness. Just one more light warden and you can finish.
You can eat that either.
I'm full of light and sandwiches.
Yep. Oh my God.
Maybe you should turn that white bread to wheat.
Yeah.
Hey. Oh my God.
I'm sorry.
No. Oh no.
That's fantastic.
And suddenly the case for rye bread becomes real in Norvan.
Yes.
Oh man.
Too much light bread.
This is why we use pumpernickel. Always, always.
We'll talk about sandwiches later.
So after the Exarch conversation, you get to sleep and you have an echo vision. Now, the unique thing about this echo vision is that you're in first person and you are peering at a copy of Heaven's Ward, the book that
Edmund
Fort Thomas wrote as the progress of the Heavensward expansion. So if anyone had the opportunity to kind of catch on to that, it was while you were doing Heavensward events, the narrator was Edmund Fortomps, and he was narrating what he was writing in that book. So when you finished the Dragonsong War and you accomplished all those deeds, rebuilding Ishgard, Edmund Fortomps was writing that story of you and what you were doing as a Warrior of Light. And it's so this mysterious person is looking at this kind of like biography of the war, and you know, you hear kind of like bombs going off and an explosion, and a man in the Ironworks outfit walks in and is like, hey, we need to get out of here. And he's just telling him that, you know, we can't look anywhere else because everything is just the same. It's all destruction. And, you know, he mentions specifically because he sees that the person, the point of view that you're receiving the vision from, he's looking at the Book of Heavensward, and he brings up that one setting in 3.1 with the dragon saving the little girl. And it's just, it's really intriguing to figure, you're trying to figure out what's going on here, right? In this vision, you can't really tell why everything's going on, but it has like that like the hints are being dropped, you know, the Heavensward book. He mentioned specifically, no, it didn't happen here. It had to happen after the liberation, things like that.
It's like, we can't do this now. We have to do it later.
They don't want to tell you directly what this vision is, but it's definitely related to you as the Warrior Light, a character that is either looking for you or something like that. And then, of course, your character can respond in kind and be like, was that the past? Or, you know, because this is the first instance we've had of something that's not happening. As far as the Echoversion is concerned, we always have had visions of the past, or visions of things that took place a couple minutes ago or an hour ago or so. This is the first time we're having something that's not already written history that's taking place in our minds. So it's really, really interesting that they did this.
It's like, hey, what's popping off over there? And why was I not invited?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, that's like, kind of our thing is the Warrior of Light.
Yeah. Like you always have some sort of vision that's connected to like an event that is currently associated with what you're investigating or what you're dealing with at the moment. This is the first time there's like no association. They're talking about you, but this is something you can't readily discern. You don't know what this event is at all.
It's just something.
There's just something that's taking place, but you can't seem to put, you know, pin in the head, like, what is this thing that's currently happening?
Yeah. And of course, this happens as you are sleeping too. So it's, mm-hmm. it's one of those awkward moments where, was that a dream or was that the past?
Mm-hmm.
Considering we're not very well.
That or the future, that's kind of a whole time-space conundrum right there.
Wibbly wobbly.
Yeah, I mean, for that was the one thing I remember out of that cutscene, because I know that was one of those, hey, this is going to be a long cutscene, be prepared, and it's like, oh, okay. And that's one of the things I do remember from that was that it's like, wait, I woke up after the Echo?
Yeah, you wake up after the Echo, and you can kind of like choose a character reaction as to what you had seen.
Yeah.
And then that's when you step out and continue your onward quest of feasting.
Yes, the new path to Calusia.
This is just like one big restaurant dash MSQ. Like you are just going from one pub to another. Like,
oh, God.
You're reviewing the Light Wardens. Like, this one tasted kind of crappy, but that one tasted pretty good.
Yeah, this one was a little grassy. This one had dirt on it.
This one just needs a little ketchup.
That's funny.
Oh God. I fear for what is to come.
Yep.
Yeah, because we make our way to Calusia, don't we? We go and meet up with Alfie Boy.
Yep, we head back to the Crystal Tower. We talk to the Exarch and the gang.
Yep. They're telling us it's time. You know, everyone's getting ready because this is it. This is the last Light Warden. They beat this. This is the full stretch, you know, final stretch of the entire conflict, you know, all the sacrifices and everything.
There's only so many places this other one could be, and Calusia is probably it because there is a Light Warden for every single area, so it follows, so we just gotta go and find it.
Yeah, and I like during that little group chatter that Yshtola just looks over at Emmett and goes, you know, we're totally gonna mess with your plans for the rejoining. Are you sure you're okay with this? And he's just like, well, I'm just here to watch. You guys are actually intriguing.
Yeah, Emmett's like, no, you guys are okay. I'm just going to sit here and watch you. It's good TV. Like, all they needed to do was give him, like, a bowl of popcorn and have him sat there munching ominously. And I would have been like, you know what? You're suspicious as hell already. But now you are 10 times more suspicious.
Yeah. I mean, like, he's still throwing his sass and still picking on all of us. Like, you know, you guys are just delaying it. I'm just here to watch, you know, eat some popcorn.
He definitely knows more, like, definitely brings back in the very beginning when he first entered into the Ocular, and he says, you know, there are about to be decisions that are coming that, you know, you need to have the knowledge that I know to be able to make them. You know, they're telling him, they're like, oh, we're going to beat all the Light Wardens. You okay with that? And he's like, you think that that's going to fix things? I'm immortal. I'll come back. It'll happen sometime.
Okay, Boomer. That meme had to be in there somewhere. It's a hot topic right now. Yeah,
it is.
A very hot topic.
And I think Emmy boy, I think he qualifies. I think he's definitely Boomer material, considering he thinks we're all too young and we're all garbage and we don't know how to manage anything. It's just like, ooh, that's familiar.
But we actually learned something really important from his banter, I would say.
His shade throwing.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. He had the opportunity to kind of use the Exarch's, like, a PowerPoint presentation.
Yes!
he just hijacks it.
Yeah, he hijacks the PowerPoint. And
it's like, hold up, girl. When did you learn how to use that?
Mm-hmm.
I'm still curious, like, what connections the
Ascendant... Oh my god, it really is a PowerPoint.
Like, I am kind of curious on how the Assassins actually had connections to the Allegans, but I know we're going to go over that later. It's just kind of funny how he just snaps his finger and then, boom, PowerPoint presentation starts.
Flexing on us.
You know, he takes over and he starts talking about what he revealed in the Ronkin dungeon about how the first people were creators and that the star itself just decided to go into absolute chaos. And they had to figure out a way to manage that chaos that was being created from their magics. And then they summoned Zodiark, and Zodiark's power put the creation back into a state of order. And then the summoning of Hydaelyn, how people were worried that Zodiark had got too strong, so they needed to balance it again. And then they summoned Hydaelyn into the existence. And this is where it gets real interesting, because he begins to describe the concept of Suttering. He says that Hydaelyn's existence primarily stands as a counterbalance to Zodiark. And in order to do so, her power allowed her to split Zodiark into 14 pieces. Now, what ended up as a result was, because he was the will of the star, he was, you know, the reality that was put into order by his existence. So that split everything into 14 pieces, not just him. And that included all of creation as well. So all the people, all the Marotines at the time, were all split into 14. Everyone living at that moment were split. And the only people that managed to get out of that was himself, La Habrea, and Elidibus. It kind of explains, you know, a little bit more to the existence of the shards. And of course, I mean, a different perspective on it, because Hydaelyn said that she had to split the star into 14 pieces to fight him, whereas Emmett Silk is saying that was her power in the first place and she chose to use it in that direction, but all of creation got split as a result.
Yeah, she didn't have to, but she did.
She did. She didn't have the concern of creation and reasoning when she was attacking Zodiark. She just did this thing and it caused all of existence to be split as a result.
Oof.
So...
That's going to be something we're going to have to cover later on, because, there's so much there.
Yeah.
But it's a good cutscene. Go and watch it again if you haven't watched it already. If you haven't played up to that point, wait for it.
Yes, do indeed.
Very good cutscene. You can actually talk to him. He explains a little bit more about how Ascians work, which is really something I really like that they added. You know, whenever he's standing in the corner, you can ask him questions. Now, I always think it's funny that you can ask a question or you can say you're not interested. And I was like, man, people who don't ask him questions are missing out, because he goes into a lot of detail. And he mentions about the Ascians, how all of them are split into 14 versions of each other. The only ones not being split are the three he mentioned earlier. And that an Ascian, so the names, so Emmett Selk, La Habrea, Elidibus, those are all titles to an office. And they actually have true names. This is where we first learn about this. And that they receive the name of the title when they get raised to it. And whenever someone gets slain in that title, another one of their shards or another one of their representations across the 14 take its place. And it was explaining that it's easier to have those that were already tempered by Zodiark to take those places. But at any point in time, should he find a means, they could raise anyone to those titles.
Well, you know what position Emmett Selk wasn't in? HR. All hospitality, girl, because no hell, no way.
Oh, God, definitely not customer service either, because that would not fly. I do want to dive in more to that, but we are going to have to save that for another actually podcast. We're going to have to jump more forward.
Okay.
Wait for the little cost guys. They're going to be good.
Oh, God. Yeah. Please do listen to those when we get to those here. But that cutscene he is referring to is called, or the quest that it's under is called Return to Ulmore. So if you do want to look and see what he was referring to there, please jump over and look at that cutscene.
Replay that.
Yep. So, I mean, I don't mean to push, but we've been trying.
We got time limits, ladies.
Yes, we do have time limits, and some of us are actually on a shorter time, so Dylan's going to be dipping out here soon because Dylan's got prior obligations here. But we jump over to Ulmore at this point in time, and things are actually kind of starting to take a little weird turn. People are kind of staring.
That's an understatement.
Yo, it's like they all drank the Kool-Aid.
Or ate the meal.
Oh my god.
I don't know. This is kind of one of those references, and Dylan actually pointed it out to me, and it didn't click until before the podcast. It's like, oh, wait a second. Oh my god, it is just like Soylent Green. The Mule is Sin Eaters.
Yep.
Yep, you have that little cutscene with Alfie, and you know, you have Reen, and of course she knows her stuff when it comes to Sin Eaters. She takes one look at that ball of meal and she's just like, oh my god.
Oh my god, there's light in there. You guys don't want to eat that.
That's ground up Sin Eaters, guys. They all been eating it. All of them. They've been queuing up to eat that.
Well, and you even learn further that not only is the Mule Sin Eater, the comments about ascension, about how, you know, those that didn't no longer had use could find use through Vothry. You learn that that was basically them being turned into Sin Eaters as well. So, you know, that young girl that lost her voice, she became a Sin Eater as a result of losing her voice. And any other bonded citizen or free citizen that was no longer useful to the Ulmorans was turned into a Sin Eater. So it's directly implied that Ulmore is literally a Sin Eater factory.
Yeah, it's a production line. They're churning out that meal and using all the Sin Eaters that aren't useful anymore.
Yep. It's you know, those that turn into Sin Eater become Mule. Mule turns creates more people to come to Ulmore, to become Sin Eater, to create more Mule. And it's just it just kept on going.
The solo duty after this point is pretty cool though. I like it a lot. It's very very, like, you get a taste of what Vothry is capable of as a villain. And some people write Vothry off like, well, he's just a giant tantrum baby. And he is. Like, I'm not going to deny that, but...
No, he's a spoiled rich kid.
He is a spoiled rich kid, but he's been feeding all of these people this stuff. And he's mind controlling them. And in turn, he's trying to gank you. He's like, you know what? I'm done with you. Like, I'm done with you causing trouble. I'm just going to mind control all of my citizens and use them as a meat shield.
Yep. Like, and that, it was everyone. It was soldiers. It was bonded citizens. It was free citizens. Everyone's charging at you and they have absolutely no idea why.
Yeah, no one was safe.
Yep. And they even tell you, they're like, don't kill them. They don't know what's going on. So you knock them out.
Yeah, like as you're running from the elevator to Ulmore, you're just running into those citizens. And it's like, and then they start attacking you. You're like, oh, God.
What did I do to you? Do I owe you money? Chill.
It's like, I know I'm public enemy number one, but this is ridiculous.
Yep. Well, in the process of that, don't you run into Ranjit and he actually looks at you and he's like, oh, no, I'm not mind controlled. I'm doing this of my own free will.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. No, he chose to fight.
He's real smug about it, too. Like, I don't need the Mule or mind control. I'm just going to kick your ass anyway. And I'm like, okay, that's nice, Ranjit. Yeah. Okay. This is another situation where you turn around and go, okay, Boomer, because he's another old guy, too. So we got to do this.
Oh, yeah. You know, chasing us just because we stepped on his lawn. But I still love his form and his techniques. And I really wish that we could have gotten that.
But no. That fight is cool, though. That fight where you square off with... I mean, and you see similar mechanics to the ones you see in the fight when you are playing Thancred. So there is some cohesiveness. Yep. He's not just doing new stuff. He assumes, well, the Warrior Light doesn't have this.
That's his technique. That's his fight style. And they definitely mentioned it as he's, you know, his style that he learned before the Flood, so...
It's the last of its kind, which makes it even sadder. But that fight is tough as a healer. That takes a while. But at least you're able to heal yourself.
Oh, yeah.
The last thing that got me in that fight, though, I'm not going to lie, was when you end it, he says, I can't quote it directly, but it's something like, there they are, my little girls.
Yeah.
Or whatever, referring to the Minfilias that he raised and trained before they were killed in the field of battle. He saw them again.
He does get his soft ending, doesn't he? He's been a bit of a dick up until now, but you kind of get that one shining moment at the end where he remembers his true purpose and he remembers how much he loved all of them, which is kind of why he's done all of this in the first place. Yeah, his dad form.
But then you make it all the way up the stairs and
oh, that cutscene though. Oh, gag.
You come across Vaughtry and it looks like he's eating.
He is going to that all-you-can-eat buffet and just chowing everything down. And
I am not going to lie. It, like, ruined my appetite for quite a while.
No, well, I'm right there with you.
He's just stuffing his face, right? And you notice all the seniors that were there before are gone.
They're gone.
Not only that, their feathers are there.
Yeah, the one angle shows the feathers. Ugh.
Yeah, it makes you think that he might have eaten them too.
Oh my god. So they included all of the chewing noises as well. Like it was like they had someone, they were just like saying to the voice actor, like, yeah, just lean really close into the mic and chew. And I'm like, you know what, ASMR has its merits, but this is not it, sis.
This is not it.
How can we trigger everyone?
Actually, I don't think it's someone actually eating. I want to say it sounds like, and I'll talk about it later, but it does sound like they're like taking a bottle and crunching it with like Jell-O inside to get that squishy noise.
Okay, now it's time to move on.
I gotta eat dinner after this.
Yeah, so he, you know, he's just like, I'll rebuild my paradise after I finish my dinner. And then the thing we all noticed but didn't want to think about until the last minute, his little armpit head,
his baby
opens
titty,
its eyes. Yeah, his face on his chest opens its eyes, and then it shrieks, and everyone just falls to the ground. And that's, you know, they realize he's the Light Warden. He's the one that has been sending the Sin Eaters to attack Crystarium. He's the one behind it all. And he grows wings.
Yeah, those tiny little pudgy wings. It's like he's like a cherub.
Well, so when I saw that, I know there was a meme that came out after the MSQ. And it was, doesn't anyone remember the Bug's Life? A Bug's Life?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a beautiful butterfly.
Yes. Someone took that caterpillar. Someone took that caterpillar
and stuck his face on it.
Yeah, they put the words, I'll rebuild my paradise after I finish my dinner. And it's just like, and it's just the caterpillar from that movie. And I'm like, now I can't think of anything else.
They did Heimlich wrong, man. Poor Pixar. Yeah. Their baby.
Yeah. And I don't know. There was another, not to make it more disgusting, but like he went full Grudge and like just body was facing one way, head completely one.
The body horror.
Oh, yeah, it's just
This has been the body horror expansion, to be honest, though. Really? Like there's been a lot of that. I mean, you think about the people and the way they turn into Sin Eaters, and you see them in the cocoons and you hear the crackling, and what happened to is it
Tezlene?
Tezlene, yeah. What happens to her, and the fact that you see her, you hear all that crackling, you see all the, you know, the white fluid coming out of her eyes and her mouth. Like, that's classic body horror.
Yeah.
And it's all been like that. It's been horrifying. And this also, like, it just followed the theme. And I was like, you know what, you didn't have to do this, but okay.
Yeah. That's just like, I know there was a mod, and we're not usually fond of mods, but it was gold. Basically, somebody took the Fat Chocobo mount, replaced the Fat Chocobo with Vaughtry, and it with the little tiny wings.
Oh my god, yes, I saw pictures.
Honestly, so like when I saw him flying away, my first thought was like, oh my god, it's a Hell Moogle.
Yeah. So as he's flying away, he's made that loud high-pitched screech, and you know, which kind of makes us all vulnerable, and instead of attacking us, just flop, 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 flop away.
Yeah, he pieces out. He leaves us.
And you watch the volcano in the distance kind of just start to buckle and crack, and the summit of the mountain rises into the sky, surrounded by a ring of light. And you see him, that's where he lands, and you're just like, he tore the volcano in half? Like
everybody in the first unanimously screams, that's cheating.
Yep.
Like, when I saw the ring popped up, first thing, because this has been a very Final Fantasy VIII inspired expansion as well. The first thing, or first thing I thought when I saw this, like, oh my god, it looks like Belmont Gardens.
Mm. Oh, like, yeah. It did.
But kind of little halos.
Mount Golag, though, is from a different Final Fantasy. Is it like 4 or something? Yeah,
the name is from the first one, I believe. Mount Golag is a volcano in Final Fantasy 1. That's, if I recall correctly, that's what it, but
we can fact check it later. It's fine. Yeah. We can fudge it. Our problem now is getting there.
Oh god, yeah.
Yeah. And it's a mountain from the original Final Fantasy.
So and we talk about it. Like, we talk about it amongst ourselves, amongst our little adventuring party of dysfunctional dads and babysitters. And we say, well, reaching it by air is going to suck.
Yeah, because they'll just send sin eaters at us.
Is there any way to reach it on foot? Because that's probably going to suck too. What are we going to do? We have to go and talk to some people.
But before we do that, you know, we check on everyone, make sure everyone's okay. There's all those moments of self-realization. All the characters are like, man, I was eating Sin Eater this whole time. And then others, you know, there's some people you meet that kind of still stuck in the dream, even though they were broken free. They're still like, but that was better.
They're a little high still.
Yeah. Pretty crazy.
You need to bring them down from that.
Yep.
Like, I don't know how you could bring somebody down from that type of, like, I can understand keeping the secret from them that they were eating Sin Eaters, but like, oh, how would you, like, go about telling them why they feel funny? Well, ate bad mushrooms.
Alfie does his little speech, and he brings everyone together and explains things. I noticed, in a very shrewd move, he does not mention the meal. He mentions they were mind-controlled. He does not mention that they were eating them, I don't think.
Yeah, I believe you're correct there.
Which is good, because that would just induce, like, psychosis in everyone instantaneously, and we'd have an additional problem.
Yep.
Which is having to kill everyone.
People, you end up putting people asleep using dream powder because you're trying to get them to relax so you can get that addiction off.
Yes. So,
which is really, really interesting. And then
that whole cutscene is very sweet. I think it's the culmination of Alfie's abilities as, you know, a little political shyster and a little mover and a shaker. And I'm just like, oh my baby, I'm so proud of you. And of course, my favorite part is when Cat Mama's there, like Dulia. I love her so much.
Yes.
If anything happens to her, I will march my way to Square Enix's headquarters and bang on their door until they let me in and set fire to the place. I'm not even joking.
She is sweet and adorable. But
she's our mama.
After all of that is done, though, like, what I like afterwards when Alfie talks to them is like, yeah, you were under the influence of the Sin Eater and there was some mind control, but you still did what you did. You have to assume responsibility.
Yeah.
Yes. And
yeah, the Chais do a really good job of assuming responsibility.
They do. God, yeah. Everybody does, kind of.
Daddy Chai is a little hesitant, but...
Well, Daddy Chai is a little bit of a coward. Like, we're not going to lie. We're not going to be, like, ulti no shade. He's a little bit... He's a work in progress.
Dulia does, like, the classic wife thing and looks over him and is like, honey, you need to be the man that I married.
Yeah. Yes. That was a power. That was really good. Yeah,
that was.
We're talking about rebuilding. What is it? The ladder? Do they call it the ladder? I think it's the ladder.
The ladder,
The ladder, and also like the giant Voltron bot.
Yeah, oh my god.
We'd probably, and they're just like, well, the Talos haven't functioned in forever. And Dulia's just like, Talos? Oh, but my hubby, he's the heir to the Daedalus Stoneworks. He knows all about those.
He's the one that creates them. And it's like,
you'll fix it, won't you, honey? And he's like, god damn it, wifey.
I kind of, all right, to be honest, I felt like a little bit of a Hildebrand moment there. Just like, hey, you're going to do this, right? And he's like, not my responsibility. Oh, honey. Oh, yes, honey, I will go help him. Yes, let's go make more Talos.
It's because he loves us so much.
Yes, really, my sweet. Anything you want, my sweet. I'll get right on that.
And then my watch, dang it.
Anyways, the whole string of quests after that is very heartwarming.
Yeah.
You get to get up. You help prepare the ladder with all the planks, and then he gets the Talos working, and... There's a really interesting, a lot of people like to refer to the scene, you know, when Emmett Selt walks up and he's just like, man, I remember back when things used to look this good.
It's like, wow, yeah. I remember when everybody cooperated? That was sure nice.
Yeah, and he says something, and then, you know, I guess I can't remember if you make a comment, but he's like, yes, Asians are allowed to cry too. You know, Asians have a heart. And he's like, don't you, he says, don't you remember?
Yeah, never he's mind. Like alluding to you remembering yeah, something. And I'm like,
and then he's like, never mind. And then he walks off and you're like, wait, what do you mean? Like, oh.
Foreshadowing and shade. That is his job. And he's very good at it.
Yep.
Yep. So Dylan did have to leave us, but we're going to continue on, guys.
Okay.
So I don't know if that little Dylan noise is in there, but if it is, I do apologize. Dylan did have to go to her previous engagement, so.
Gotcha.
That's okay. We'll fix it.
Yeah.
pull one pumpkin spice anything out.
Yep. One pumpkin spice. Are they still selling those?
The ale definitely. Like, ale is definitely still around because they're trying to shift it. The lattes, I don't know. Maybe that is a cool thing.
I got a pumpkin cold brew today, so they're still being sold. So
okay, yeah, so yeah, pour one pumpkin spice out for Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't drink the coffee. So what we're getting onto now is, I love that cutscene afterwards. So when Ardbert, you kind of like gesture at him to come onto the thing, and there's all these people behind him that are just like, oh, is she gesturing to me? And I'm like, no, I'm not looking at you. Looking at my boy.
Looking at my ghost.
Not you, you.
My imaginary friend, I'm talking to him, or I'm waving at him. And he comes up onto the lift with us, and he makes a big emotional speech about how everybody working together is so great, and he remembers doing stuff like this with his peeps. And I'm just like, aw, why do you do this every single time? Can't we just have a comedic moment with you, Ardbert? Or is that just not allowed?
Yeah, can't we just have like a nice, peaceful moment to relax, enjoy the scenery? Because I've never been up here. I know you have, but I haven't. And look at this view.
No spoilers, Ardbert. Oh, but we get up there, girl, and it's just like, oh, this is going to be inhabited. There's not going to be anybody up here. This sucks. It's a wasteland.
See, yeah. I thought the exact same thing, and then...
Town nearby.
Alizé's just like, hey, look at this. There's a person look. And a town.
Hey, look, there's a person staring at us. Quick, we must give chase.
What?
Yes, because what we are really good at is chasing down and harassing the locals.
Yeah, you know. Give me your lunch money, kid. I need more sandwiches from the Exarch.
And we find out it's that poor bastard that got chucked off the rampart. Yeah, the painter. And he's just like, well, we live here now. All of the people that kind of weren't allowed to live in Yulmor and couldn't be like in the little town before it. I can't remember what that's called for the life of me.
Amity?
Yeah, they've set up their own little town.
All the exiles.
All the exiles, all of them. And it's just like they have their own little community and everything. But I don't know, they're a little bit about helping us. They say they might, maybe.
No.
I understand why they're upset, to be honest. They did kind of get treated a little poorly.
Well, yes, they did get treated very poorly. But then, you know, they also give us a hint that, oh, you know, if you're going to go up there, you might want to talk to these guys. These guys know the lay of the land.
These guys.
Yep. These guys. The dwarves.
My favorite beast tribe.
Okay. So my first impression when they actually showed the dwarves at FanFest was like, ah, cool, dwarves. They look like Vivi from 9. I wonder if we'll, you know, they're animatronics or something like that. Or animatons. Nope.
No, bro. It's just Lalafell.
Yep, they're just Lalafells. By the way,
Lalafells aren't the master race in this world anymore. Like, they are actually, they've been relegated to being a beast tribe, but they're pretty cool, though.
Oh, yeah. By the way, I wasn't a Lalafell at this point in time, so I didn't get to go in the houses.
No.
I haven't got up until that point. I haven't gotten up to that point on a Lalafell, but I will at some point, someday, eventually.
Yeah. I was, during the charity stream, I was going to be like, well, hey, you know, if we can make it up to 2000, I'll go back to being Lalafell. Shifty eyes. And you're like, oh, you don't have to do that. We won't make it that high. Yeah, we didn't make it that high, but I'm still thinking about it.
You're a potato now.
Yeah. Well, no, not yet, but maybe.
But of course, Lally-ho is now everybody's favorite thing. Nobody greets each other with like the wave emotes anymore. It's always the Lally-ho. Yep. Always.
I noticed
beards are yes. Status, and I feel much appreciated because my beard would find much support in the dwarf community.
Yes.
Wow, beard shaming some of us who can't grow them.
Oh.
Hey, everyone has a beard in Tamra, so.
That is true. Like, the whole series of quests in Tamra, where you see, like, those two little separate settlements of dwarves squabbling amongst each other.
Because they don't like,
My beard is more fabulous than your beard. It's like, it's a cat fight. Like, it's a little cat fight between the two tribes. I'm like, ooh, you guys need to put your handbags away and settle down.
Yep. You need to chill out, little ones, because this is not how we're going to fight or build this thing. So, come on. Just give each other hugs, compliment each other's beards, maybe give some grooming tips.
You know, exchange some beard oil or something. If you're not going to exchange an olive branch exchange, give each other, trade some beard oil amongst each other. Like, that little scene at the end of the solo duty that you do with the Exarch goes with you to meet the dwarves, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yep.
And he goes with you, and he does that little solo duty where you take the little guy out and go to drug all these people. What is it with this expansion and drugging people or putting them under
drugging
the influence
people.
Of like,
I mean,
sinister.
You beat them up, you know, and you just give them some sleep powder and
night night. Then they have that little fight. We come back. The dwarves say, "Look, you got the stuff for us. Here's some pickaxes." And I'm like, "Okay, that's cool. Can't you give me some people? Some people would be nice." And they're just like, "Nah, no people for you."
Yes, all things are coming to according to plan, but sadly, we are going to have to cut this podcast into a two-parter again. I do apologize, guys.
God damn it.
It's my fault. I apologize.
Too much lore. Right.
There is a lot of lore, and like,
I mean, it is an entire world. It is a new world, so.
Yes, it is an entire, completely different world than the source. And on top of that, like, yes, it's just so much of it.
Too chunky.
But we're almost there. Almost there. Yeah,
we're almost there. So, for those that have been questioning at this point in time, the hashtag Free Kroa, we actually got asked about that today from our superiors. They're like, what is up with this Free Kroa? And I know it was in the episode on the 4th.
Yes.
It was like very little, and we explained it. And
we did allude.
we did. And it just kind of caught me off surprise because I was expecting it like to go a little bit further before they actually noticed. So anybody that did notice, thank you for noticing, and please use it because Kroa does need some time off to do more lore stuff.
Make it trend, guys. Free him. Free my co-host.
Yes. And also, don't forget to pour out that pumpkin spice latte for Dylan Thorne.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure she'll be back soon, like, to serenade us with her dulcet tones. And if she's not, I'm just going to cry and kick and scream like Vorthry until she comes back.
Or until you grow wings and fly off into the distance, removing a mountain from its base.
Look, I am not that extra. Like, I might be a shady bitch, but I'm not that extra. I'm not going to pull a mountain.
Rebuild paradise.
You think I'm going to rebuild paradise in Phoenix? Oh, oh. No, girl.
You never know.
Okay. Hell is one thing. Paradise is another. And this is definitely hell during the summer. So no, I ain't rebuilding nothing. No, I'm good.
But with that, guys, we are going to end today's podcast. Thank you for tuning in. We greatly appreciate it. Do you guys like always. Do you guys got any other encouragement to say?
Me? Encourage people? Hell no. Well, obviously, keep listening. We love you. Look forward to the lorecasts and future episodes because we're going to get this done. We are. We are taking our sweet time, but we're going to get it done.
Yeah. I know the superiors are like, oh, you need to get this done. It's like, well,
we're doing it. We're almost done. I promise.
Yep. We're almost done. So by the time we get done, it's going to be at the beginning of the year. We'll cover 5.1 by then. Yep. We'll be perfectly good.
And then we'll have nothing to do other than look at memes, I guess.
Look at memes and just laugh at Vulfry.
And cry over the fact that none of us have gotten a role in a particular raid.
Oh, God, yeah.
Look forward to that in another podcast. All the tea, all the shade on 5.1.
Yes. But thank you, guys. We greatly appreciate it again. And until next time, we wish you all a wonderful eve.
Have a good one.
Aetherstream is part of Aetherflow Media, a community-based project with a focus on Final Fantasy XIV. Aside from this podcast, we produce web content and our magazine, Aetherflow. And if you like what you see and hear, consider joining our Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/aetherflowmedia. All funds go towards providing you with the best possible content that we can create.